Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Tom Rosenbauer, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing small streams. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Tom Rosenbauer about fly fishing small streams. The show tonight is brought to you by the Orvis Company, makers of fly rods in the USA since 1856, and still on the cutting edge with their award-winning Helos fly rods. Check out their premium quality flies like Copper Johns, Beadhead Princes, Elk's Hair Caddis, for only $1.50 each at orvis.com/flies. Fill your fly box this season at an incredible price. Find out more about all the great fly fishing products Orvis has at www.orvis.com. Before we introduce Tom, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for a drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Tom's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We will also be giving away a copy of Tom's most recent book, The Orvis Guide to Small Stream Fly Fishing, courtesy of Universe Publishing. So this is an incredible book, beautiful photography, and great information. You'll find out more about that tonight as we go through the show, but this is a book you'll want to have, and here's how you can win it. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show, and the question's going to be about something that Tom and I talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win Tom's book. I know you'll like it. Tonight, our guest is Tom Rosenbauer. Tom has been with the Orvis Company for 34 years, and while there has been a fly fishing school instructor, copywriter, public relations director, merchandise manager, and was editor of the Orvis News for 10 years. He is currently marketing director for Orvis Rod and Tackle. As merchandise manager, web merchandiser, and catalog director, the titles under his direction have won numerous gold medals in the Multi-Channel Merchant Awards. Tom was awarded Fly, Rod, and Reels Angler of the Year Award for 2011, for his educational efforts through his books, magazine articles, and podcasts. Tom has been a fly fisher for over 40 years and was a commercial fly tier by age 14. He has fished extensively across North America and also fished in Christmas Island, the Bahamas, Belize, in Kamchatka, Chile, the fabled English chalk streams. He is credited with bringing beadhead flies to North America as the inventor of the Big Eye Hook, magnetic net retriever, and tungsten beads for fly tying. He has 10 fly fishing books in print, including Orvis Fly Fishing Guide, Reading Trout Streams, Prospecting for Trout, Casting Illusions, Fly Fishing in America, Approach and Presentation, Trout Foods and Their Imitations, Nymphing Techniques, Leaders, Knots, and Tippets, The Orvis Guide to Dry Fly Techniques, The Orvis Fly Fishing Encyclopedia, The Orvis Fly Tying Guide, which won a 2001 National Outdoor Book Award. He's also been published in Field & Stream, Outdoor Life, Catalog Age, Fly Fisherman, Gay Sporting Journal, Sporting Classics, Fly Rod & Reel, Audubon, and others. His latest book, The Orvis Guide to Small Stream Fishing, was published in March of 2011, is a spectacular book published by the prestigious Rizzoli International, world-renowned for their design and reproduction. Tom, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Roger. It's a pleasure and honor to be here.
Boy, that one wore me out.
Wore me out. I almost fell asleep listening to all that stuff.
I mean, with all that writing, Do you have time to fish?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes. A lot.
just wanted to make sure. Just wanted to make sure.
I have a trout stream right in my backyard with wild brooks, browns, and rainbows. I have another brook trout stream 3 minutes from my office. And I fish a lot on vacation and whenever I'm somewhere on business, so, yeah.
So life is tough, huh?
Yeah, it's really tough.
Okay. Well, I want to apologize to our audience out there because, Tom was ready to go last week. I was ready to go, but our local internet provider was not ready to go. So the last minute we had to bail on you guys and there was no way for me to really tell you about it. Of course, everything got up and running again about 20 minutes after we canceled the show, so that's how it goes. But anyway, we apologize, but we're back here at it, and we're here to deliver. So, Tom, let's get started and talk about small streams.
Okay.
First of all, and there's some questions came in about this. What is a small stream? What do people consider small streams? So what's your definition of a small stream, especially relating to your book and how you addressed it there?
Okay, of course, to anyone it's subjective, and you can decide what small stream means to you. To me, it means a stream that's about the width of a single lane in a secondary highway or smaller. And in my mind, a small stream is a stream that doesn't get fished a lot. It's not a major trout stream. It's not well known. For instance, the Big Thompson in your part of the world is size-wise is almost a small stream by that criteria, but it gets pretty heavily fished and it gets a lot of traffic and it's well known. So even though it's small in size, my way of thinking is it's not a small stream.
Okay. I would take it that a lot of the tributaries off the larger rivers are small streams.
Yes, exactly. And some of the best small stream fishing is in tribs, obviously.
Yeah, where possibly a bigger fish could be moving up in there, especially during spawning season and so forth.
Bigger fish, but, I think more of the fact that there's nobody will bother you. There's no canoes. There's no drift boats. The fish are usually wild in tribs. And you have it all to yourself, and the fish are usually a lot less picky. So,
yeah, and that was the next question: is why should we be interested? You kind of just answered that, but are there other reasons why we should be fishing small streams?
Well, getting away from it all, and just getting down to the essence of fly fishing. I mean, typically, you don't use a lot of lead and indicators. It's a nymph with maybe a little light weight on it. It's mostly dry fly fishing. It's one of the most effective ways to do it. It's just pure casting for the most part without a lot of false casting or double hauling. It's almost always wild trout as opposed to hatchery trout because it just, for the most part, isn't worth it for states to stock these streams, and most of them have the water quality to support wild trout. So it's a great break from saltwater fishing or from fishing in bigger rivers. It's just I love all kinds of fishing. Small stream fishing is a great break from all the other stuff.
Now, Thomas Murphy in Redmond, Washington wanted to know, are the small streams generally more ecologically sensitive? Is that something we should be concerned about?
Yeah, I think they are. They're the lifeblood of most of our trout streams. The tributaries are where the fish spawn and where the cold water comes from and where the, not necessarily the nutrients, but they're really the veins that feed our bigger rivers, and they are pretty sensitive. On the positive side, they're pretty easy to fix when you have a problem because you can put structures in them, you can plant trees, and you typically don't have to worry about floods washing them away. Yes, they're very sensitive, but they're also quite a bit easier to fix.
Great. I know there's a lot. That has become an issue in some of the more agricultural areas, where you have these small spring creeks or small, brooks and so forth,
yeah,
cattle land and so forth, and that's when you can get a lot of damage. But like you say,
you can fence the cattle out, and it'll come back pretty quickly. And if your tribs aren't healthy, your main stem won't be healthy either. So they're so important, and people sometimes overlook damage that happens on smaller tribs, but it's something that everybody should be vigilant about.
I've had a couple of questions come in here on the internet, and I think we better clarify this right up front. They're asking about, for instance, what kind of species fish do you like fishing in small streams, and this one has to do with smallmouth and mm-hmm. small streams. So are we talking primarily trout tonight?
I'm talking primarily trout, yeah.
Yeah, just wanted to clarify that for the folks.
Yeah, I mean, the stream the size I'm talking about, it's rare to find too many smallmouths. I mean, you might find some rock bass and sunfish, but smallmouths typically like a little bit bigger habitat, so we're really talking about trout here.
Yeah, okay.
Not that I'd pass up a smallmouth if I found one, or a sunfish, or a catfish, or a chub, but...
anything really that'll get that. On the hook, huh?
That's right, that's right.
A tug is a tug. Okay, let's. So now we know what we're talking about here. We're talking about basically small trout streams, and let's talk about food and flies in these streams, because I'm assuming there's going to be some differences in what's there, and of course, what we use to fish it, based upon that. So, let's see here. Chuck, Santa Rosa, California, says, often we are so much about matching the hatch. I'll run a small mountain streams I fish. General attractor patterns seem to work just as well. How come? By the way, I love the Orvis Fly Fishing Guide podcast. I always listen to them while I'm working in the yard. So, a little kudo to you there. So,
well, I'm with Chuck. There's a different situation in most small streams, and this is other than spring creeks, which are kind of a special class of small stream that are very rich. But in the typical small stream, you don't have a lot of food. You don't have a lot of autochthonous food, which is a fancy word that fish biologists use for food that is produced in the stream. And a lot of the food in small stream comes from above, from terrestrial insects. You don't have the profuse mayfly and stonefly caddisflies in small streams. When you think of it, it makes sense. In a small stream, you have a riffle and then a pool, usually. And you might have, if you look in just linear, straight-line feet upstream, you might have, 6 feet of riffle feeding a pool in a straight line. Whereas in a big river, you might have 200 yards of riffle feeding a pool. So there's a lot more aquatic, a lot more room, and a lot more of the nursery for aquatic insects in a large river. Some of the studies biologists have done have found that small stream fish eat up to 80% terrestrial insects, which then goes to fly selection and selectivity. When fish eat terrestrials, they are typically not very selective because they eat a moth now, and 5 minutes later they eat an ant, and then they eat a beetle, and they eat a grasshopper, and then they eat an inchworm. They see a lot of different stuff, and a lot of the stuff they eat is bigger than the typical aquatic insects that you see in a trout stream. So, A, they're eating a lot of terrestrials, but B, they're not very picky because they have to eat. They have to eat whatever looks remotely edible, or they die. They starve to death and they waste away. So, anything that falls in is fair game. As long as it looks like it's alive, they'll eat it. And, yes, you can catch fish on ants and beetles, and of course hoppers are great, but ants and beetles are not the greatest small stream flies because you can't see them very well unless you're in a flat pool. It's hard to see, and I like visible flies, and I think that, Parachute Adams makes a good imitation of a horse fly or a deer fly or a house fly that's fallen in, and Stimulator looks like moths, and Alcaire caddis looks like a moth, and I don't think the fish care. So, the attractor patterns, I think, are the way to go, stuff that floats well, stuff that's visible. And on the nymph side, yeah, you do have some nymphs in small streams, and the fish eat aquatic larvae, but they also eat drowned terrestrials. So again, they're not very picky. They're looking for drowned beetles and drowned inchworms and drowned moths, and anything goes.
Now that Parachute Adams, I'm telling you, that that fly has risen to the surface. No pun intended. more times than not in my interviews over the years.
It is the most popular fly in the world. And,
is it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I have that on good authority because I get a look at the numbers.
So oh, yeah, yeah.
It
yeah.
is the most popular fly in the world, and with good reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody knows why, and I don't really want to ever find out why. But
and they're easy to see.
They're easy to see, and that's so important in small streams, and it's not just for seeing the fish take. Small stream fish, even if they've never seen an angler, are just as sensitive to drag as fish in the Bighorn or in the Delaware or in the Madison. Because drag is not natural, and they're very sensitive to drag, and you've got to be able to see that dry fly to know if the fly is dragging. So a visible fly is so important in a small stream, as much as in a big stream, if not more important.
So even though they're ready, willing, and able to take these big attractor patterns, the presentation still plays a
part. Drag will kill you. Drag will kill you in a small stream, drag will kill you in a mountain stream with cutthroats or brook trout that have never seen an angler.
Mm.
Now, there are times when they'll take a dragging fly, but more often than not, boy, I've seen them come for a fly and it starts dragging and boom, they're gone.
Now, Joe in Lorain, Ohio asks, what's your favorite searching pattern? Is there one of these attractors that you put on first?
Yeah, you know, Parachute Adams right at the top of the list, but I like a stimulator, and I fish bigger flies than a lot of people. I'll fish even for a little brook trout, I'll fish a size 10 stimmy, because I can see it even better than a Parachute Adams. It floats really well, and it looks like a moth, and you know, I think it can look like a beetle. I think it can look like a lot of things, and the fish will come to that big fly. And also, you know, if you got a lot of really tiny fish in the stream, you kind of sort through them, and you just get a rise, and they slap at it, and then you laugh, and, you know, go back to find that monster 8-incher on the next couple of casts.
Monster 8-incher.
So, you know, I like Parachute Adams, Stimulator Humpies. Well, Wolf's not one of my favorite flies, and I have no idea why. I just don't do well with it. Alcare Caddis is a great fly. You know, anything that's buggy, anything that's a traditional fly that's been around for more than 20 years, you know it's a good fly that you can see and floats well, is going to be a good small stream fly.
Well, Bob in Duncan, Oklahoma asks, if you had to fish any small stream anywhere in the U.S. or world, what five flies would definitely be in your box?
Parachute Adams, Stimulator, Beadhead Pheasant Tail. That's about all you need.
Well, maybe put all three of them on at the same time, right?
beadhead hairs there, and I guess I'd have to throw in a streamer. I'd put in a little tiny conehead muddler, as small as you can tie or buy, like a 10 or a 12. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in high water you need a streamer. Not very often, but it's nice to have a streamer, so I guess that's what I'd use.
Well, now... Frank in Albany, New York, asks about any specific fly colors that work better. But basically, all the flies you just talked about, color is pretty natural.
I'm not answering Frank's question. He's too close to home.
Oh,
I don't want him in my stream. No, I don't pay any attention with color. I typically use natural colors, brown, you know, browns and tans and grays, and I don't really worry that much about color in small streams.
And George in Alabama asks, is the Elkhair Caddis the best fly ever tied for topwater in small streams in the Rocky Mountains?
Certainly one of them.
Right up there with the
Parachute Adams. Right up there with the Parachute Adams and the Stimmy, probably in the top 3 to 5, yep. That's a great fly. Again, the Elkhair Caddis looks an awful lot like lots of terrestrials, so I think that's one of the reasons it's so cool.
Yeah, and you know, looks alive out there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's durable, and you can see it, because, you know, to tie an Elkhair Caddis properly, you're using that really light bull elk, and that really shows up well.
Yeah, easy to see. Excuse me. To take a quick break here, Tom, and when we come back, we'll talk more about food and flies on small streams. So stay with us. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging on to their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. It's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Tom Rosenbauer about fly fishing small streams. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question. We'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Tom, at this point in the show, I always ask my guests, what's going on in your fly fishing world? Tell us, obviously, you just finished up this great book, but tell us about that and tell us about what else is happening in your world.
Well, it was a really fun book to do. I love small stream fishing, and having to do the book, I concentrated on small stream fishing for a couple of years. So it was wonderful. But I'm glad now to be able to spend more time, especially saltwater fishing. I just got back from Belize, and where I caught a permit, and that was pretty nice.
Nice.
And I'm actually finishing another book for Rizzoli on fly tying, on the essential American flies, kind of the iconic American dries, nymphs, streamers, and saltwater flies, which has been fun, but ton of work. Fly tying books are so much work.
Yeah.
Doing the photography and the tying steps and the history. I love doing it. I learn a lot, but it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a big program at Orvis that we call Fly Fishing 101 that we started last year, and we really rolled out this year, where we give free 3-hour lessons in our stores and many, many of our dealers on Saturday mornings from May through the middle of July. And that's been terrifically received. We don't start till May 21st, and we have 5,000 people signed up already for
wow.
classes. So, really, really exciting to see, and we see a lot of families taking these courses together, which is really heartwarming. So,
I noticed you have a store being put together in Boulder.
Yeah, it just opened. Just opened the other day.
Oh, it opened now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yep, it's
I was
open.
Going by the other day, and I saw big banners out there, Orvis coming or something. And then
just opened.
Cool. I'm going to put you on the spot. Well, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but Ralph in Parker, Colorado, is going to put you on the spot.
Oh, that Ralph.
He wrote in here on the internet while we were talking. He says,
okay.
What is unique about your book that would make me want to read it or distinguish it from other books on fishing small streams?
Well, the one thing I can tell you is that Jim Babb, of the editor of Gray Sporting Journal, wrote the introduction, and Jim is a small stream nut. I mean, he lives in Maine. He grew up in East Tennessee fishing the small mountain streams. And he said in the introduction he learned something new on every page. And anybody that knows Jim knows he doesn't kill the lily. That was probably the biggest compliment I've had on the book.
Great.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in there. There's a cast that Joe Humphreys taught me, a very special bow and arrow cast that has never been shown in print before, and that's a pretty cool cast.
I guess I'll buy the book to see it, because I can't show it over the internet.
No, we can't, and I couldn't really describe it. You have to see it to appreciate it.
So there's a teaser for you.
Yeah. And, you know, as you know, Roger, the pictures are really pretty.
Oh, yeah.
Really did a spectacular job.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, small streams are just so beautiful anyways. And
yeah, that cover shot especially is like, oh, boy, would I like to just, you know.
You know, that's where I fish on my lunch hour.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. All right, so I'm jealous. Okay. Let's get back here and talk more about food and flies here. Grant and Dixon up in British Columbia asks about ant patterns. Is there a good generic ant pattern you use? I know you just said a minute ago that you're not real hot on those because they're hard to see. But
yeah. Well, if you're going to use an ant pattern, make sure you use one with a post that sticks up. You know, the ant patterns with the red dot on the back look really cool, and they work well in flat water, but it's hard to see them in small streams. So you want a parachute ant, and I know that red shows up pretty well, and you see them with red and orange posts, but when you think of it, there's no color that reflects light better than white. It reflects more light than any other color, and I like my post to be white, so that'd be a good one. You know, the Royal Wolf, I don't use it a lot, but it's not a bad ant imitation. It's got those two bumps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Phil, also in British Columbia, asks, he says, most experts agree that freshwater snails make up a significant portion of trout's diet, but never seem to hear much about using them.
No.
Why?
Presentation is tough. But, you know, we've had an infestation of small land snails around here past couple of years, and I have a trout stream in my backyard, and there's a big brown trout there, and there's a couple guys that come and worm fish every once in a while, and I don't post my land, so I say, yeah, go ahead, do me a favor, if you catch a big fish and you kill it, let me have his stomach and open it up and see what he's been eating. So a guy got a 22-inch brown trout out of my backyard last year, which I don't really mind him removing because it makes room for more of the little rainbows that rise more frequently. And we brought up the house and we cut open his stomach and he was full of these snails. Mm. So I tied up a perfect imitation of that snail. And I fished it all summer and I couldn't buy a fish on it. So.
Yeah, yeah.
They do eat them, but I couldn't, something was wrong.
But hard to get that slow, slimy, crawling action on the bottom.
Yeah. Although, you know, they do sometimes get in the meniscus and kind of crawl across the surface. I mean, I've seen floating snail imitations, but you don't see them on small streams very often, more in still waters.
So to kind of sum this up with flies and food in the small streams, the gist that I'm getting from you is pretty much go with attractors and, you just need a handful of flies. You don't have to be fancy about it.
Yeah, don't sweat it. Don't make it more complicated than it is. You know, it's really the essence. It's more about walking and stalking and presentation and just enjoying your time out there. And I can count on the fingers of one hand and have a couple left over the times I've seen a hatch on a small stream where I had to actually imitate an insect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for that, those few times, don't really need to worry about it.
No, and it's funny. A lot of streams I fish, I never see a fish rise ever, and I catch 95% of my fish on dries. Yet I never see them rise.
And that's exciting in and of itself there.
Yeah, so, you know, dry fly is a very, very effective fly in small streams.
Let's talk a little bit about equipment, because we've got quite a few questions coming in.
Yeah.
David in Columbus, Ohio, says, when selecting a rod for small streams, what are some of the most important things to keep in mind? And let's mix that in with Joe's question from Rapid City. He says, you do use different size rods depending on the size of the creek or river you are fishing, so...
Yeah, well, the best rod is the rod you got in your hand and the one you own and you're comfortable with. Unless you're fishing a really tight, incredibly tight, brushy stream, I don't think a short rod has much of an advantage. Because a lot of times, particularly in little streams with pocket water, you need to hold some line off the water to keep the fly from dragging. I think that a 7.5 foot, 4 or 5 weight rod is about right for most of the small streams that we fish. You need, you know, twos and threes are fun. Ones, twos, and three weight lines are fun. And sometimes I use them and other people do, but you're typically pushing a bigger fly. You know, you're pushing a size 10 stimmy or maybe a stimulator with a copper john hanging off it, a size 10 copper john or 12 copper john. So you need that little more beef that a 4 or 5 weight line will give you. And again, the short rods, you know, sometimes, yes, when you're very, very tight and brushy, a short rod helps. But I think most people, when they're casting, they don't cast properly in a small stream, and that, again, they make it too difficult. You should almost never false cast. Your cast should be really short. And, it just should be either one overhead cast, up, down, fish it, up, down, fish it, or roll cast, same thing. Make a roll cast, fish it out, make another roll cast. If you have to dry off your fly, give it a couple quick flicks with 5 feet of line out, and then go back to no false casting.
Mm-hmm. I would think the longer length rods would be advantageous in kind of dapping. And
they are, because sometimes you have to dap. You know, sometimes you just can't make a good presentation, and you got to dap. You know, 7.5 foot, you can get into a pretty tight spot with a 7.5 foot rod. So, and even an 8 or 8.5 foot, you know, in mountain streams, like a lot of the high altitude streams you have in Colorado, you could use a 9 foot rod because you don't have a lot of brush in those high mountain rocky streams. So, and a 9 foot is probably a little too much. For the most part, your regular trout rod will do the job pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I would advise people, and I think this is answering another question, is that what a lot of people don't realize is most trout rods, most fly rods today are optimized to cast 35 feet or more. You know, there's a sweet spot in every fly rod where it casts perfectly. Longer casts are a little compromise. Shorter casts are a little bit of a compromise. They work very well, but there's always that sweet spot. And most rod designers make it for parking lot casts and for casting on a pond at a show. With the result that when you're fishing 10 or 15 feet of line, you're not bending the rod. You're not working it. And I don't care if you've got a full flex rod or a tip flex rod or a fast rod or a slow rod, then that's not going to work. So if you have your standard fly rod, it's a really good idea to overline it by one line size. So if you got an 8 foot 4 weight rod that you use on the bighorn, probably be good idea to put a 5 weight or even a 5.5 on that rod, because it'll bring out the action of the rod and it'll cast better in short.
Especially when you're doing like roll casts.
Yeah. There's a few rods that are optimized to cast in short. The Orvis Superfine series, and I know that Sage also has a series of rods that are designed for shorter casts. And it's not so much the action of the rod, it is the load on the rod. You know, there's two things. There's the way a rod bends under stress, and there's how much it bends. And they're two really different things, and you have to increase the load on the rod by using a little bit heavier line size.
We had questions from both Thomas in Redmond, Washington, and Paul in the UK. And they both are asking about the Tenkara rod.
Yeah.
If that's something you've tried or found.
I haven't, but I'm going to this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'd be a lot of fun in small streams. I don't have a dying need to fish a Tenkara rod because I love the way fly rods work on small streams and regular fly rods. And I like to cast. I like to cast short and tight. But Tenkara just looks like a fun way, and it looks like a perfect thing for a small stream. So, no, I haven't tried it, but, yeah, I think it would be a great way to fish small streams.
Jeff in BC asks about reels for small trout. He says, do you use a click paw type reels or disc drag? Does it make any difference?
No, I've never needed a disc drag on a small stream. But you never know, you might catch a big fish, but they're not going to go very far, usually.
Up into the woods, right?
Yeah, up into the woods. So, no, I use whatever reel I got on. You probably don't even need a reel.
Right.
In small streams. So, it's nice to have whatever reel you use, you want to have one that has a real light drag setting because, a fish will occasionally take a little line on you in a small stream. You want to be able to let that fish run. But
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Terry in Fort Collins, Colorado asks, he says, I assume small streams usually mean shallow water and or pocket water. What length leader do you normally use and size tippet?
I almost always use 7.5 foot leaders, and I think a lot of people run into problems in small streams when they try to turn over a 9 or a 12 foot leader. And when you're casting 15 feet of line, it's tough to turn over even a 9 foot leader.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not getting a very long drift over the fish. You're sneaking up, you're making a quick cast and usually putting just the tippet over the fish, whether you're fishing a nymph or a dry or a streamer. So I think that people will have a lot more fun and it'll be a lot more pleasant with a 7.5 foot leader. If I do find the need to go longer, I just tie on a long piece of tippet, like a 3 foot piece of tippet. You know, if you need a little extra drag reduction or the fish are a little spooky, I just put on a little bit longer piece of tippet.
What size tippet do you go with?
Well, to match the fly, usually you can get away with 4 or 5X. The times I've seen in small streams where you need 6 is rare, maybe in midsummer on a flat pool sometimes. Some of these woodland streams, particularly in the east and places like Pennsylvania, you can get some really long, flat pools where the fish are spooky, and you want your delivery to be as delicate as possible. But usually 4 or 5X is fine. I don't use fluorocarbon in small streams at all, and I use fluorocarbon everywhere else. But I don't use it in small streams because I don't think you need it, and I'm almost always fishing a dry fly, as I think most small stream anglers are. And I want my tippet to float in small streams. I grease my tippets because it helps reduce drag and it keeps the fly from getting pulled under. Mm-hmm. And, if I'm fishing a nymph, then I just rub the line dressing or fly paste or whatever I put on the tippet. But I don't think you need fluorocarbon. Fluorocarbon is more expensive. And there's no reason to waste
no advantage,
it.
Really.
No, I don't think there's any advantage.
Yeah. Let's take another quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about finding fish. And that's always the big question. Where are they? So I'll be right back and talk more about fly fishing small streams with Tom Rosenbaum. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. It's www.royalgorgeanglers.com, or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Tom Rosenbaum about fly fishing small streams. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. So, looks like some of these questions we've been coming in here we've answered. Just kind of checking the internet here, Tom, to see what's coming in. Let's see. Okay, well, this one we'll touch here in a minute. Let's talk about finding fish here. What Igor in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, asks, what features of a stream in the northeastern U.S., eastern Canada, apart from temperature, would you strongly suggest that may have trout in it? Could you name some of the one or two features that are dead giveaway for actually seeing the fish?
Well, let's briefly talk about temperature first, because temperature is the key limiting factor in most of these small streams. And if you find a stream that's below 70 degrees on a hot summer day, you probably got a trout stream. I don't care where you live. Just because somebody else isn't fishing it or you never heard of someone fishing it, don't rule it out because you might find a stream that you have all to yourself. Other than temperature, I think the best thing to do is just go out there and do it and put on a parachute Adams and fish it in the middle of the day, because most of these streams fish really well in the middle of the day. And fish a half mile. If you don't get a rise, or if you don't even get something swirl at your fly, then you might have reason to suspect there's nothing there. But, if the water temperature is there, and if you're in trout country, you know, if you're in eastern Canada or Colorado or Vermont or the mountains of North Carolina or Tennessee or New Mexico or Arizona, it's probably going to hold trout. I when I drive to work, I pass over, I think I counted eight streams this morning. I did that on my way to work, that I've never seen anybody fish in. Four of them I've never fished, and I know they have trout. And they're just, you know, small streams are just, they're just hidden gems, and they're everywhere. Everywhere that you have water coming out of the ground that is over 55 degrees, and you can actually look at a groundwater map on the internet, or there's one in my book, and you can figure out where you're going to have small trout streams really easily.
How does winter freeze affect fish kill in some of these smaller streams? Where do they go when these?
A lot of times, if they don't have big pools to overwinter in, where they're not going to get bothered by anchor ice and water freezing solid, they move downstream. They move downstream to bigger water, and of course, moving downstream can put them into marginal trout water, but not during the winter because the water is going to be at oxygen saturation during the winter anyway because the water is cold. So they'll move downstream in the wintertime until they find a pool that's deep enough and secure enough where they can get out of the current and tuck in there and rest.
And I guess for other people too, they could always check the local fly shops and fish and game and to see, you know, to ask about certain streams to see if they're productive or not.
Yeah, although sometimes the fly shops don't even know about them. They don't.
Yeah.
Or they don't care. They've never bothered with them, you know, because they don't guide on them because they're so tiny. Sometimes fish and game. I think your best friend is a topo map. Find a trout stream. Look for the little blue lines that run into the trout stream and then, you know, go up a mile or two and check those out.
Sounds like, from the way you talk about it, that's part of the joy you have is the exploration and the searching.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, for me, not for everyone, but for me, once I find that there's trout in one of these little streams, unless the fishing is really good, it's kind of like, okay, next. I just want to find out what's in there and what species. And once I find out, then I want to find another one to check it out. So, yeah, the exploration, finding it yourself is one of the biggest thrills.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some strategies and tactics that you might use. And we got a question on the internet here from Kurt in Madison, Wisconsin. He says, "How do you approach a small stream that you haven't fished before?"
Carefully. How do I approach it? Well, yeah, the first thing I do is make sure that there's nobody around. Because if somebody's fished through there, you know, if I see a car or another angler, I'm gone. I'm going to find another stream, or I'm going to drive a couple miles away because I don't want spooked fish. If fish are spooked, I'm not going to know if there's fish there or not, you know, because they're not going to eat. So,
right.
So you know, you approach it carefully. You know, you sit down like any trout stream. You sit down on the bank and you watch and you look for bugs. There could be a hatch. Sometimes you might spot a trout. You know, look in, creep up to a pool and look into it. But the thing really is to just get in and start fishing it carefully. And in small streams, there's often a lot of wasted water. You know, there's often a lot of water that's really too shallow to hold fish. So what I recommend is that people move quickly between pools, between good-looking water, and then slow down when you get to a good stretch and kind of creep up and stalk the pool and fish that thoroughly, not too thoroughly, because, you know, usually small stream trout take it the first cast or they don't, and then move quickly and find the next decent looking piece of water. Don't try to fish all the water.
One of the questions that came in on the internet is, speaking of how you work the water, is let's see here, is it always better to work, this is from Leo in Jefferson Township, Pennsylvania. Is it always better to work your way upstream on a small stream?
Most people do because most people fish dry flies. It's a place where you can fish dry flies all day long and not have to worry about matching the hatch or, you know, getting too fancy about it. It's just cast your dry. And it's really one of the most efficient ways because the water is typically so shallow that, and fish are looking for terrestrials all the time, that that a dry fly is going to be one of the most effective ways of fishing. So upstream with dry fly is a lot easier. But downstream works too. You have to be really careful because in, you know, typical downstream presentation is you're kind of across from the fish in a bigger river and you can kind of slide by them and sneak by them without spooking them. But in a small stream, you can't. And you're pretty much limited to almost casting straight downstream. So it's tough to get a swing on a fly. And it's tough to present it. So it's more difficult if you find a stream that's wide enough and it's got some riffles to it. Sometimes working downstream with a soft tackle and staying back from the stream if you can and just swinging a soft tackle through the riffles can be a really fun, relaxing way to fish. Mm-hmm. But the most efficient is probably working upstream.
Okay. Rick in southeast Pennsylvania wrote in here on the internet. He says, hey, does Tom use a dropper when he goes for wild brookies? Or just in general, do you use a tandem rig at all or just one fly?
Yeah, that's a good question. If the fish are on dry flies, then, you know, if they're taking the dries and they're coming up for the dries, I don't. Because oftentimes you're making really tight casts and you're trying to fire that fly under a branch or right next to a rock, and you can't be as accurate and you can't get as much line speed with a tandem rig as you can with a single fly. And you get hung up more often. You know, we all get hung up in trees. And you double your chances for getting yourself into a furball with tandem rigs. So I don't, but, you know, if fish aren't taking the dry fly, then I think the thing to do is to put on a big dry and hang a nymph on it and use a dry dropper. You know, sometimes when the water's cold or the water's deeper, you do have to fish a nymph. And I don't particularly care for strike indicators in small streams. I mean, it's just kind of one of the places when you can get away from them because you don't really need to get that deep. The water isn't that deep, so you don't need lead. And you know, just
better off using that attractor.
Yeah, right. You're better off doubling your chances. So. Yeah. But yeah, you can do both. But just bear in mind that if you're fishing tandem rig, you're gonna get hung up, and you're not gonna be quite as tight and accurate as you would with a single fly.
Ted, again, one from the internet. Ted in Naperville, Illinois, asks, "What advice do you have on walking on the bank and being more visible versus wading in the water and being lower but possibly noisier?"
Yeah, good question. Good question. I think it's a mixture of both. I think you have to take each pool and each stream by itself. You know, if you're in a meadow stream, chances are you're better off staying on the bank, even though your silhouette's a little higher. You know, try to kneel down or crawl and not get in the water because meadow streams are usually slower and your waves can be pushed ahead of you. And you can creep around on the bank a little bit easier, and then when you get into a rocky stream where it's easy to wade and you can keep your silhouette low, I think you're better off being in the river. But it depends on a lot of variables, how much brush is there. You know, it depends on a lot of things. I think you have to take each one as
it
comes.
I know a lot of, in the valley that I live in here, there's a nice little brookie stream going through it, and a lot of it is, a lot of willows down there.
Yeah.
Really hard to get in there. I mean, you almost have to fish over the top of them sometimes
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
see what you're doing. And other times it's almost like, it's just kind of impenetrable, you know. So.
Yeah, and what people should understand is that, sometimes if you walk a half mile, maybe it's really impenetrable right there, but, you know, if you walk away from the road, you might come to a place where there's a beautiful plunge pool or it opens up or there's a meadow or something. And the other thing is sometimes you're just going to pass up some water. Depends on your mood. Sometimes you say, you know what, I just don't feel like trying to get my fly in that tangle today. All right, so move on. And some days you do. Some days you're a little more relaxed and say, okay, I'm going to try a bow and arrow cast in that little alley and see what I can do. But, you know, that's the fun of it. You decide it as you go.
Another question on the internet. Brian, Northern Virginia asks, high water, small stream, how would one approach it in productive fishing? So basically we're talking about high water. Is that going to change your approach at all? Or?
Yeah, just like in bigger rivers, high water is tough, you know, especially high cold water, high spring runoff. It's really tough. Don't feel bad if you get skunked, because I do lots of times, and even in streams that I know really well and I know exactly where the trout are, it's hard to get you're probably talking nymph, because the fish aren't going to come up for a dry, and you got to get that nymph right down close to the bottom, and you got such a short period of drag-free drift. The one thing you can try in that situation is that small streamer, the little tongue head, or a little weighted woolly bug, or even just crimp a split shot on the head and fish it upstream, so that you're just moving that, stripping that fly fast enough to keep up with the current and give it a twitch every once in a while. That's my only suggestion. The fish are going to probably be in the same spots they were at low water,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to be hard to get to.
Larry Hall in Indian River, Michigan, asks, he says, I believe there are bigger trout in some of these small streams, and more than most people realize. What's the most effective way to catch the biggest trout in these small streams?
Worm.
Worm. Fly fishing only show.
Okay, sorry.
A San Juan worm, okay.
Yeah. I would think if you know there's a really big fish in a small stream or you suspect there's one, I think the best thing to do is get up at the crack of dawn and fish it at, you know, that half hour before sunrise when duck hunting starts, that kind of light, and fish it with a small streamer.
I know there are big fish in some of these small streams.
There are, yeah.
They'll
surprise you.
Up in northern Wisconsin, I knew a guy up there who worked in the logging industry for, you know, his father did, he did, and he'd been in the woods, like born under a tree somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
But he was one of these guys who would go along these small little creeks and reach under the bank and hand grab, you know, like
mm-hmm.
16-inch trout from underneath, 20-inch trout from underneath.
Yeah.
And these were small streams, you know.
Yeah, and people catch a big fish in a small stream and they go, it's up in there spawning, but they're often resident, particularly brown trout. Brown trout doesn't need much space a trout in general doesn't need much space to live in. As long as they got food and they got protection,
mm-hmm.
they don't even need an awful lot of runway. And
So where are they going to be under those undercut banks?
Yeah, they're going to be deep. They're going to be deep and under in the impenetrable places. They're not going to be out in the open where they're easy.
Yeah. Let's talk about some casts here, because we've got people that have written in. Here's one from Leo Smith in Minneapolis. He says, Tom, fishing a small stream in windy conditions as an additional challenge given the typical greenery around the water. Any advice for casting approaches on these days, windy days?
No. Same thing, because, you know, I think if you're trying to fish a 9 or 12 foot leader, or you're trying to false cast, or you're trying to make a long cast, it can be difficult, but you shouldn't be in most of these small streams. You should be creeping up on the fish, making one short cast without a false cast, and you're done. And, you know, usually the wind, I mean, typically wind isn't a problem in small streams because they're a little bit more protected, but sometimes you get into a big, more of an open meadow stream like they have in the Midwest. I would think just shorten up your cast, shorten up your leader, and, you know, standard overhead cast if you can get away with it, roll cast if you can't.
And this is,
The other thing you could do is you could fish downstream with a soft tackle and swing it, you know, get way above the fish and just throw a soft tackle and let it swing across the current. That doesn't require a lot of precision usually, and you don't have to worry about the wind as much.
Nate in Wausau, Wisconsin asks, what are the most effective casts to use when fishing small streams with overhanging trees?
Same cast you use anyplace else except shoreline. Standard overhead cast with no false cast and a roll cast. Bow and arrow cast if all else fails. You know, the pull back the tip and let it fly for that special bow and arrow cast that you have to buy my book to see. I'm sure somebody will have it on YouTube next week, you know. But it's the same cast. It's the standard cast you use, but with shorter line and with no false casting.
I know.
I don't think there's anything fancy about it.
Yeah, we did do a show with Joe Humphreys on small stream and brush fishing.
Yeah, he's the master. He's my hero.
Yeah, so if folks want to look that up in our archive, you might want to go find that show, and there'll be some additional things on brush fishing and so forth.
He is the man, and at 84 years old, I fished with him last summer, and he still tears around those little brook trout streams.
Yeah,
he's amazing. He's an amazing guy.
And he just turned 80 or something.
No, he's over 80.
I know, but when I interviewed him.
Oh, yeah.
I know he's older now. Yeah, because it's been a few years. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the man.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see here. Let's see. We covered that. Here's one. Kevin in Plainfield, Illinois. Yes. Tom, thanks for writing Prospecting. This book has been read by me many years before the beginning of the fishing season. Here's a line from Prospecting. This is your book, right? So, how long do you go before changing flies? Could you talk about this for us all?
Yeah, in small streams we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go a long time without changing flies. I'll change pools or change water or even change streams usually before I'll change flies. You know, put on the old parachute Adams or stimulator, the attractor of your choice, and fish it hard. And if you don't even get a swirl at it, it's probably not the fly. It's probably the fish are spooked or the water's too cold or there are no fish there. I'd move because if there's a fish there, it's going to at least take a swat at a parachute Adams as long as the water isn't 40 degrees. And if the parachute Adams doesn't work and you know there's fish there, then hang a copper john or a hare's ear or a pheasant tail off it. And keep moving.
Thomas in Redmond, Washington, talks about this spooky fish here. He says he fishes Bryce Canyon, Utah area, where the water is clear and the brookies are bright, and it can be quite a bit of exercise. He said, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the challenge of spooky fish in tight cover.
Yeah, that does make it tough. That does make it tough. Longer tippet, you know, again, probably not a longer leader, but a longer, maybe 25, 30 inches of 6X. Smaller fly will often help. Sounds like this is probably flatter water, so maybe a lower floating fly like a beetle or an ant that you can see. And keep your profile low. Don't wade into the pool you're fishing. Fish it from the riffle below. Use a rock to hide your profile. I always turn around when I'm fishing a small stream to make sure I'm not silhouetted against the sky. I always try to get a boulder behind me or some brush or something because, boy, as soon as your head pops above that skyline or above an obstruction, boom, they're gone. So always turn around and look and see if you're going to catch your fly on your back cast. Anyways, take a look at where you are in relation to the sun and the skyline make sure you're not sticking above that. Slow movement. You know, fish are more spooked by fast movements than they are slower movements. So you can, if you have room, cast side-armed, cast a flat to the parallel to the water, keep your rod tipped down. What else? Stay on your knees or on your belly if you can do it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that can be tough. I know, up on the Dream Stream here in Colorado and these high mountain meadow streams, you are very well exposed.
Yeah, you are, and in that stream in particular, I don't know.
There's a lot of guys crawling around the banks.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Well, you need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk more about fly fishing small streams with Tom Rosenbauer. Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's Fly Fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's www.womensflyfishing.net or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Tom Rosenbauer about fly fishing small streams. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there on our homepage to ask your question. We'll receive your question right away, and we'll try to answer them on the show tonight. Well, let's see here. We did have some new questions come in here. So here's one from David Sutherland in Oklahoma City that came in today. When fly fishing small streams, it seems that many of the best holding places for large fish are in undercuts. This is what we were just talking about, where the current is typically stronger than the rest of the stream. Often it is has the added difficulty of some type of overhanging vegetation or shrubbery to complicate the cast. What is the best way to approach this type of situation without hanging up in the vegetation both before the take and after the fish is on the line? This has frustrated me for years, and I have missed many opportunities to catch some very large fish in these conditions.
I think you've got to have a lot of luck. I think that's one of the things that keeps us going back. I don't think there's any instant formula for that. I have a number of those myself. Although the fish aren't that big in the places I'm thinking of. They're still tough. Sometimes you can get ahead of the branch off to the side and throw a fly ahead so that it floats underneath. Sometimes you want to go to a nymph if the branch is right on the surface of the water. Sometimes you can throw a nymph above there and let it swing through that deep hole. The other thing that is, the fish are holding in those places, but often they're not always feeding there, and these big fish will often drop down in the evening to the lower end of that faster water where it flattens out and it's easier for them to feed. And sometimes those tough fish, you can catch them right at dark, the magic hour just before dark. They'll get down there and they'll rise or they'll feed either at dusk or sometimes very early in the morning when diurnal drift is just ending and whatever nymphs are in the stream are just stopping drifting and going back to the bottom. Those fish will slide down into the shallower water where they're easier.
Yeah, I know we talked, it was one of the recent shows we were talking about this similar situation too, and our guest had talked about feeding if it's possible to get upstream of that where there's overhanging trees and undercut,
yep.
and then get up far enough, and if you can feed into it rather than cast to it, you know what I'm saying?
So there's also the technique that I used to use when I was a kid, and I still use once in a while, is to turn your fly into a jig and take a little tiny little marabou or, whatever streamer you like, put a split shot on the head of it, and feed it down into there and jig it.
Mm-hmm.
it'll work.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a, let's see, Brian in Westby, Wisconsin. He says, I've tried nymphing without an indicator, and it seems like I miss so many more strikes. Do you think an indicator on small streams spook more fish, or is a soft cast more the key to success?
I think in some streams an indicator does spook them. What I would advise in a situation like that is to take a cue from the Czech, the European nymphing technique, and fish that nymph on a little tighter line so that you're almost in contact with the fly. Use a pretty heavily weighted fly and keep up with the fly. Keep real good tension on the fly, and so that it's deep and it's dead drift, but you're just in contact with it. So when a fish takes in that situation, you will feel it. If you try to throw a non-indicator nymph rig as you would in a bigger river where you got a longer float and you can watch your line a little easier, that's not so hard. But in a small stream, it is hard to get the fly down and see the strike. But I think if you stay in contact with the fly, probably be better off in that situation. Or use a dry dropper. You know, put on the big attractor fly and use that. Because a size 10 or 12 stimulator lands a lot softer and is a lot less disturbing to a fish than a pink indicator landing
right
on their head.
Right.
So.
We've got two people, Frank Wood in Norwalk, California, and Torb in Denmark. Both wrote in and asked about stealth on small streams. Torb in Denmark says, I love fishing our small streams in Denmark. Is a stealth approach more important in small streams? His second part of his question is, are opportunities better in the golden hours, morning or evening, in small streams?
Yeah, the golden hours thing, I think yes. In some streams, it's very water temperature dependent. And during the, when the water's warm, when the water's at 60s in the middle of the day, or even 70 in the middle of the day, early morning and evening are good. The fish are less suspicious then. They're usually feeding a little bit heavier. But in a lot of the small mountain streams, not even mountain streams, but the streams that stay cold all summer long, the fish are actually more active in the middle of the day in some of these tributaries because the water is so cold that it doesn't get up into the 55, 60 degree range, which is optimum for most trout until the middle of the day. So it really depends on the stream and the time of year. But, any time of day is good. These fish are feeding most of the time. What was the first part of the question?
Stealth. How important is stealth on the stream?
Yeah, I kind of have a rule of thumb. If you're fishing pocket water, a pocket water stream with lots of boulders and whitewater and riffles, drag reduction is more important than stealth. Usually you can get pretty close to those fish in pocket water. If you're fishing meadow streams and low gradient woodland streams, spring creeks, then stealth is more important because you seldom on smooth water have much of a problem with drag because of you don't have a lot of conflicting currents in the smooth water. Mm-hmm. So, if you're going to generalize, I think stealth on the lower gradient streams and drag reduction on the higher gradient streams.
Okay, Dave, and Dave is in Scotland. He says, many of the small streams I fish here in the UK and in Europe are wildly overgrown with trees and brush for long stretches. Often casting is difficult and sometimes impossible. Given that these may hold higher numbers of better fish, what is the best approach, upstream or downstream? And at least fishing downstream, I can get the current to move the flies into potential lies. I'd be grateful for any suggestions you might have.
Yeah, and he's right. He's right. Sometimes those really, really brushy streams, the only way to do it is to feed a fly downstream into those tunnels or pass them up and look for a little more open spot. But, the better fish are probably in those little tunnels, and you can dap. I know they know how to dap over in Scotland.
Yeah.
Or you can feed it down into there, and You know, I don't think there's any secrets.
Or get one of those industrial weed whackers and just go down both banks and get rid of the trees. Right?
Yeah, it's not so good for the habitat.
So, okay, let's see what we've got. There's been a couple of questions here kind of randomly about using spay rods or spay casting on small streams, and I'm not sure where these guys are going, but do you see any use for spay?
I don't know where you would possibly have any use for a spay rod on a small stream, but I do, and a friend of mine uses a lot, not a lot, but he uses a snap tee a lot on small streams. It's not a very good catch for a dry fly, but when you're swinging a wet fly, a soft tackle, or a streamer in a small stream, and you're kind of fishing across and down, this snap tee with a single-handed rod is a really good way to position yourself into a roll cast where you may not have room to do a regular roll cast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a good way, you know, you don't have to make multiple roll casts to get your fly where you want it. Just do a little snap tee and fire it to the far bank. So that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, people are finding more uses for spay casts in smaller waters, but I don't know what you would do with a spay or a switch rod in a small stream. Yeah. Not the small streams I'm thinking of, anyways.
Right. Well, you know, you just brought up a. There's many times I've been on high mountain lakes where, you know, the midday has been kind of, you know, the doldrums.
Yeah.
And, but now you've given me a good idea. Just go down to the feeder streams, either up or downstream from the lake, and when the lake goes off, go to the streams because they're probably the best time of day for the streams.
It probably is, yeah. I mean, so many people ignore these little streams. And
yeah.
And you're right. It's a good thing to do in the middle of the day in a bigger trout stream or on a lake or whatever. When they fish, not only do they fish best in the middle of the day, but most of these little streams fish best in the middle of the summer, unless you're in the deep south. A lot of them don't get good. I mean, around here in Vermont, the small stream fishing doesn't get good till July. And July and August are the best months. And that's when the bigger rivers are, you know, full of inner tubes and warm and kind of punky and difficult. So
yeah. Fred in Michigan asks, he says, your thoughts about fishing beaver ponds? And, of course, a lot of these small streams are full of beaver ponds. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yes, fish beaver ponds.
Yes.
Yeah, beaver ponds are a lot of fun, and you know it's a place where there's potential to catch a much bigger fish than you would in the small stream because they got room to grow and there's not any current to deal with, and so you'll often, particularly brook trout and cutthroats, and sometimes even brown trout, you find some much bigger ones in beaver ponds, and I don't know, the best technique I've found in beaver ponds is to fish a small nymph like a pheasant tail. And just cast it out there and strip it back. You know, you'll see them rise frequently in beaver ponds, but usually in the evening. But just blind fishing carefully with a small nymph and stripping it back with little tiny strips works pretty well. I mean, there's a lot of little damselflies and swimming mayflies, calabatus and stuff like that in beaver ponds typically. So, you know, they're used to chasing things that dart, little darts through the water.
Mm-hmm. We've had a couple of questions here. Bill Gates up in Sterling, Alaska, asked this, and let's see, we had another fellow here asking about clothing you wear. Do you wear camo or, you know, green or sage colors?
Yeah, I try to match the background. You know, just muted colors. You'll see a lot of people in red shirts in my small stream book, but that's because they show up
in the photograph.
Yeah, in the photograph. But yeah, you know, white's not a good color unless you're fishing a meadow stream and it's kind of a high overcast day. Tan, olive, camo is not a bad idea. I mean, the more you can do to break up your outline, the better. I personally don't wear camo. More cognizant of my shadow and my profile and my movements, and try to attack it that way. But You know, like a light turkey hunting shirt or a early season duck hunting or dove hunting camo shirt is not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in general, you just want to try to blend into the background. But breaking up your outline is not a bad idea.
That keeps coming back up in your replies here, is that profile and the. I guess if you're moving against a tree in the background, it's going to be harder for them to distinguish what's going on. But then, if something pops up above that tree and moves past, then
they're not
really
to,
apparent.
Well, you know, I'm sure a lot, you and a lot of your people have noticed that you can have a bridge where there's tractor trailers rumbling across that bridge all day long, and the fish are feeding to beat the band right under the bridge. Yet if you go and walk on that bridge and your head peeks over the guardrail, boom, they're gone. You know, it's something they're not used to seeing above the, and it's amazing. The fish in a lot of the meadow streams will feed happy as a clam when the cows are right next to them and the cows are in the river. But, you know, you're a little bit higher than a cow usually and your movement's a little bit different. You'll spook the fish where the cow won't. So it's what they get conditioned to.
Right.
Windy days on small streams are often easier to approach the fish because the foliage is moving. So you're moving a little bit, but you're also the background is moving, so
yeah,
the fish aren't going to notice you as much.
Yeah. We have a question on the internet from Mark and Ben in Illinois, and they ask, are there any tips to fishing streamers downstream on small streams? Can that be a successful pattern? You mentioned a little muddler you might put in your box. So how do you?
Yeah, it can be successful. Often you don't have room to really swing them, so you just kind of got to throw it downstream and. And sometimes you can just let them hang in the current, or you can just flip your line back and forth and let the streamer dart back and forth. But usually just hanging it there and kind of jigging the rod tip is the best way to do it when you're hanging a streamer downstream.
Mm-hmm. Here's kind of an interesting. Seth in Brevard, I don't know where that is, but do you ever break down your rod and only cast with the tip section?
No. Lefty Craig. I'll leave that to Lefty Craig.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Somebody we interviewed.
You could, though. You could.
Yeah, somebody I interviewed, I can't remember who it was, maybe it was Bruce Chard or down, fishing saltwater for permit or something, broke his rod and ended up fishing that way.
Oh, I read about that.
Landed a permit or something.
Yeah,
you know.
I read about that. Yeah. You know, one of the things you can do, and I think it was Lefty Cray where I heard this, is if you've got a really tight spot, you can choke up on the rod and actually hold the rod above the grip so that you're getting a shorter arc on your rod tip.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to use half a rod, but you know sometimes if you just hold the rod in the butt section above the handle, that's going to give you a shorter arc. One of the things I didn't mention is that when you're fishing small streams, it's okay and probably a good idea to be more wristy, because when you're if you got a tight spot, when you're casting with just your wrist, again your rod goes through a shorter arc, and as long as you follow the you know principles of fly casting, you know, rod dip in straight line, dead stop, and starting on your rod low, you can get away with a lot of wrist. And sometimes a lot of wrist is beneficial in these small streams because it keeps your casting arc tighter and shorter.
Here's one we could all use help with. Let's see if you've got a good answer for this one. Chris in Cambria, California, wrote in on the internet just now. Do you have any special tricks for retrieving your fly from trees, and how far will you go to rescue it?
Well, you know, you get that question all the time. Oh, I get my fly caught in trees, you know, all the time. And you know what I tell them is, you're kicking the soccer ball around with your friends, and the ball goes out of bounds, and do you stomp up and down and cry? No, you go get the ball, and you put it back in play. It's the same thing with small stream fishing. You're going to get hung up in trees. You're going to lose flies. But you don't lose as many because your casts are so short that the fly is almost never out of reach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How far will I go? If it's a good pool, and I haven't really fished it thoroughly, I'll break the fly off. You know,
right.
if it's If it's hanging in a branch and I think there's a decent fish in there, I'll break the flap, because usually, often you can go and get it anyways.
But Tom, we don't all work for Orvis and have these huge bins of flies sitting around at the office.
Yeah, I don't have a single Orvis fly in my box.
Uh oh.
I tie all my flies. So.
Oh, okay, okay.
I don't have access to free flies because I'm funny that way. I only fish my own flies.
Oh well, that's good. I was waiting for the shoe to drop on that one.
Yeah, I hope the boss isn't listening.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he knows. He knows I don't fish flies.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. Any final words on fishing small streams? We got to wrap it up here, so.
No, you know, it's not rocket science. There's no big secrets. Just get out there and find one close to home and have fun with it. Most people, a lot of people, have a trout stream a lot closer to their home than they think they do. And, you know, you love the one you're with. It's a stream that you can fish before work or after dinner. You know, if it's a half-hour drive instead of a four-hour drive, There are a lot of these streams out there. There's thousands, tens of thousands of them, and they hardly get any pressure. So it's just a great resource, and it's not tough. It's fun. Just get out there and do it.
Great, great. Well, unfortunately, it's time to wrap things up and finish up here. So stick with us, everyone. We're going to be giving away that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. And we're giving away Tom's latest book, The Orvis Guide to Small Stream Fly Fishing, which, of course, has that secret cast in it. So stay tuned and see if you win. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry is united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit www.savebristolbay.org. Savebristolbay.org. And you can learn more there about how you can get involved and help. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, "What did you think of the show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. So the winnings of our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. And if you didn't register yet, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so that you can win one of these great prizes that we have to offer. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll send you an email after the show and ask you for your information so that we can get the prize delivered to you. So we have the first thing that we're giving away here is one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. To learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. It's a great organization to be a part of. And they're doing a lot of great things out there to help us as fly fishers. And our winner there is David Pate, P-A-T-E, David Pate, Texas. So, David, congratulations on winning that one-year membership to the FFF, and I know you'll enjoy it. And if you already have one, well, we'll get you extended there and keep your membership going. All right, so our second prize we're going to give away is a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. You can learn more about Fly Fusion Magazine at flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. Now, that's a magazine out of Calgary, Canada, and is making great headway down here in the lower in the United States, and a great magazine to learn from, and beautiful photography. Very well done. So our winner for that is Robert Gallo in Massachusetts. So Robert Gallo in Massachusetts. So congratulations, Robert. And, again, I know you'll enjoy your subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. Now, Tom, we got to give away your book here. So I'm going to make this a two-part question because it is a really nice book, and we're not going to make it easy on these guys. Let's do this. Tom mentioned, remember this is two-part, folks, so we got to have two parts for you to win. Tom mentioned that he uses what length leader normally on small screens, what length leader. And second part of the question is most of the time he's using what kind of tippet, fluorocarbon or mono. So give me an answer to that, and you'll win Tom's book. Let's see if they've been paying attention, Tom, here. And we've got, let's see, this one's a 7.5 foot leader and mono. Would that be the correct answer? Tom?
Yes, well, it was nylon.
Yeah,
you said mono. Monofilament could be fluorocarbon or nylon, so.
Oh, well, I said mono or fluoro, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
That's a real trick question.
Really? Well, I think this guy probably got it. 7.5 foot leader in mono, that's kind of what I was looking for. So I wasn't getting too highly technical. So
yeah.
We're giving that book to Dean Wormel in Westford, Massachusetts. Dean Wormel in Westford, Massachusetts. So congratulations, Dean. He's up in your neck of the woods there, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dean, what you need to do is send in your address and contact information. You can use the same text box you just sent it in, or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. info@askaboutflyfishing.com. We'll need your name, your address, your email address, and so forth, so that Tom can send that book out to you, and you'll be getting that directly from him, and I'm sure you'll put your fine autograph in that for him, won't you, Tom?
I will sure do that. I will be honored.
Great, great. Well, thanks, Tom, for offering that book up, and I know Dean will enjoy it, and the many other people that have to go to the local fly shop or Amazon to get that book.
Or the Orvis website.
Or the Orvis website, orvis.com, to buy that book. So seek it out. It's hot off the presses, and I know you folks will enjoy it. Well, Tom, thanks so much for being on the show tonight. I'm sorry we had to line you up twice, but it was well worth it. We had a lot of fun, I think.
That's okay. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, Roger. Those were great questions that you got, and it was fun.
Yeah, we've got a great audience out there. They always come through for me.
So. Yeah.
Well, great. Our next podcast is going to be on May 4th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, we're going to interview Aaron Jasper, and our topic for the show will be the evolution of nymphing. Aaron goes where the fish are, and most of the time it's under the surface. He spent the last few years studying, research, and testing old and new nymphing methods. On this show, we'll explore many of those methods, including the latest in European nymphing techniques. So be there and learn more about nymphing. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, the Orvis Company, Front Range Anglers, Royal Gorge Anglers, and Women's Fly Fishing Alaska for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.